Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hey, this is John.
And this is Sunita.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome back to Tennis Podcast Towers at the end of day four of Roland Garros 2023. And thank you to Jonathan Peace and his friend Sunita there for brilliantly introducing this edition of the Tennis Podcast. Jonathan, you will remember David, hosted along with his then employers Café Rouge, our very first live show.
Yes, We were rather green then, weren't we? We didn't really know what we were doing, and Jonathan helped us through it.
And Matt was there in a sort of Richard Osman role at the time.
Working the presentation. Pushing buttons on a computer.
But he still had a mic, didn't he, Catherine?
He did. Yeah, the seeds had been sown. So so thank you, Jonathan, for providing a place for those seedlings to incubate and grow into the beautiful metaphor that I don't know how to finish that I see before me right now. At 13 minutes past midnight in Paris, the day has finally drawn to a close. David has just got back from the night session where he was commentating for BBC Radio 5 Live on Novak Djokovic, beating Martin Fucsovics in three sets, but three extremely different sets. But never has there been, David, a greater contrast between set one and set two in a tennis match.
I think that must be true. It'd be quite an interesting stat that I'm sure we would never find a way to pull, but the longest first set followed by the shortest second set, because the first set of this one was won by Djokovic on a tie break. I think it was an hour and 27 minutes long, and the second set was 3 love in 12 minutes, and it lasted half an hour. And honestly, you could see the air just deflating out of poor old Martin Fucsovics after losing this first set. And it's something I often think about. And I had the pleasure of sitting next to Kim Clijsters and Laura Robson in the BBC Radio commentary box whilst that was going on, and it was something I wanted to know from them, is how do you recover from losing a set like that? I mean, it is just horrific. He'd been 5-3 down, he got back to 5-all, he's playing lights out tennis. I think Martin Fucsovics is playing as well as he possibly can in that first set. Djokovic is stressed, tense, ratty with his support team. Everything that could possibly be in place for him to lose that set was there, potentially, but he didn't lose it. He won it. And then Fucsovics just basically disappeared. And Djokovic became loose and played brilliantly. And Kim and Laura were saying, well, the truth is, we don't really know how you recover from it either. It's just, and they said, in a best of five set match, they said it's even harder because you've still got to win three sets, even though you've put an hour and a half in. But yeah, it was, in the end, it was a brilliant performance from Djokovic for two sets, but you know, he's going to get more edgy sets in this tournament. And it is something I think I find a real fascination with him, is his quest for history and whether that is going to catch up with him at all.
Yeah, and of course, just hearing you say that, my mind instantly goes to US Open 2021.
Mm.
That's when he lost to Medvedev.
Mm.
I think, look, he's shown so many occasions where he can handle adversity or stress and all those sort of things and still find a way to manage these situations. But I don't know. I mean, everything's in his favour at the moment. He's come in injury-free by the looks of things, and yet there's still a few moments of real tension.
I thought that first... I know we've seen it so many times with Novak Djokovic. There was never a moment when I didn't think he would win that first set or the match. As soon as it went into a tie-break, you know, the crowd are into it. They're like, yeah, Martin Fucsovics, you're making a match of this. And, you know, us long in the tooth people are thinking, we know what Djokovic does in tie breaks, and Djokovic did what he does in tie breaks and just didn't make any mistakes, went into lockdown, just rolled through the gears because he has those gears, whereas Fucsovics was maxed out. So yeah, we'd seen what we saw in that first set from Djokovic before in terms of the stress, but it was extreme. He was extremely tense, and there was a new guy in his box tonight, the yes. one sat to Goran Ivanisevic's right. I don't know who that is. I don't Me recognize neither. Him. Maybe he's been hired just to bear the brunt, a sort of human shield for everyone else
human
in the box.
Stress ball.
He was getting a lot. He was giving quite a lot back.
Oh, good.
But he was...
I love it when they give
bearing,
it back.
Wearing a lot on his shoulders tonight.
Yeah, it's always fascinating with Djokovic. You do know exactly how he's feeling. And that's an interesting point you make about the US Open. And of course, that was it took until the final then for that to really come out. And he played a bad match in that final. And that makes me wonder whether it's a good thing for him to be on the same half of the draw as Alcaraz. You know, I know I'm jumping ahead there. There's a lot of tennis to be played before Alcaraz and Djokovic meet. But if we expect Alcaraz to be his toughest match at the French Open, maybe it would be useful that it wouldn't come in the final where he'd also have the pressure of trying to get 23. You know, he can just focus on trying to play Carlos Alcaraz and deal with 23 in the next match. I don't know.
It's a bit like the last time he won it, isn't it? When he faced Nadal in the semis in that incredible four-set match.
Yes.
And then faced Tsitsipas in the final. And actually, he was quite flat, wasn't he, for a couple of sets. And Tsitsipas was brilliant and worthy of that two-set lead. But it kind of felt, when he'd won that match against Nadal, it felt like job done, didn't it? Because... Yeah. Who beats Nadal at Roland Garros? Well, this guy did.
Mm. Yeah, that's very interesting. There was, speaking of sort of classic Djokovic things, there was one in that first set tiebreak where Fucsovics won, I think it was a 33-shot rally to reduce the gap from 4-1 to 4-2. It was an amazing rally. He did brilliantly to win it. As you said, the crowd was up. And I'm convinced that that is a genre of point that has happened in tennis repeatedly over the last 15 years where you think, wow, opponents won an amazing point. That's going to be a little turning point there. And then they don't win another point in the rest of the tiebreak because Djokovic has an ability to just say, okay, well, do it again then. Do it again. Do it again. And they can't, invariably. And he would do that even against, you know, Federer, for example. Great players, and he just has an ability to put something behind him instantly and force an opponent to come up with the goods again. And he did that in that tiebreak. It's something I always notice. I always think, oh, that could be a turning point, and it almost never is.
That deep down pit of the stomach knowledge that I'm at a 7 out of 10, you're at an 11 out of 10. I can keep this up and do more. You can't.
Yeah, it's going to take somebody with more gears than Martin Fucsovics, and because he played really well, and you know what we saw yesterday from Zajbocz Vuč against Medvedev, it's that sort of performance that is required. Somebody who is just going to hit through him, And I think Rune can do it in his own way. He does it in more of a lockdown way, I felt. He almost forces Djokovic to come out of that zone, or it's going to take an Alcaraz who can literally knock him off the court. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's interesting about that matchup, isn't it? That Rune kind of plays him at his own game.
Yes.
And you're thinking, wow, the chutzpah to do this. And for it to work, blimey. As you have alluded to, we are now... countdown time, 3 rounds away from Alcaraz Djokovic. We'll talk
about
that
many, is it?
It's not that many. Thank you, David.
I mean, it's getting closer.
It's getting closer. Thank you. That is how tennis rounds work. We'll talk about Alcaraz in just a moment. But first, we interrupt the Alcaraz Djokovic hype train to bring you news that the tennis podcast throughout Roland Garros is brought to you in association with On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. On Location is the official tour operator for... the BNP Paribas Open at Indian Wells in March. And we can tell you that their packages via Steve Fogel's International Tennis Tours for 2024 are now on sale. Look, it's not a hard sell for us, is it, to tell people that if you have the means and opportunity, you should get yourself to Indian Wells. Oh. And, you know... I know we have to say this, but we also really, really mean it.
That's
why it's a special place.
It is a great sponsorship for us because we don't have to make it up. It was amazing. We got to go in March and see those incredible views, the horizon of mountains, the blue sky. It's just a beautiful place to be at and watch tennis. And they also, it's just such a happy place to be at, isn't it? What a fantastic trip that was for us back in March.
Yeah, I came back and I was like, I want to take up golf.
Yeah, I was
hasn't
like,
happened yet, but
I was like, I don't want to play golf anywhere except Indian Wells.
Yeah. I remember saying to a few people, guys, have you ever played golf? Like, golf was great. I'm going to take up golf. And they were like, you know, other golf courses don't look like that, don't
you?
Yeah,
they don't.
Yeah, and then I went walking on Wimbledon Common, which is also a golf course, and saw
bit squelchy,
very miserable men in the rain, and thought
You didn't get a buggy.
No one there has buggies.
You had
no,
a buggy in Indian Wells, didn't you?
I've been given an unrepresentative experience of golf, I fear. If you would like to go to Indian Wells in style, it's really the only way to do it, and experience one of the most spectacular settings to watch professional tennis, staying in a 4 or 5-star accommodation, great tickets to watch the tennis, and access to a hospitality suite to relax in between matches. We've been to that hospitality suite, and it had shuffleboard in it.
It did, didn't it? And snacks.
And snacks. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast and go to the Welcome to Paradise section. What a section.
I mean, I'll tell you that. That's a selling point, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah. Yeah. Get yourself to paradise, folks. We highly recommend it. Now, on to Carlos Alcaraz. He dropped a set to Taro Daniel today. Why did that happen?
Well, in his words... it was because of the windy.
Fantastic.
He said, I tried my best to play with the windy. It was difficult to play with the windy.
Bless him.
I love that so much. It is really difficult to play with the windy.
So difficult.
That's going to be interesting, isn't it? That I wouldn't have thought that he was going to be a player... necessarily that struggled with that. I mean, I suppose when you're hitting the ball as violently as he is, any gust of wind that takes it out of your hitting zone makes you vulnerable, and also the trajectory of the ball and that sort of thing. But he just seems such a good adjuster when he's moving around a ball that I kind of feel like he could handle any of it. In the match today, I mean, I commentated on some of it, and he was awesome for a set. Absolutely stunning tennis. And Taro Daniel hung with him. That was the thing. He took him on and really, really caused him some trouble. And it did remind me a little bit of the match he lost against Marijan at in Rome. I mean, I don't think Terry Daniel played as well as that.
He was hitting quite a lot of drop shots though, wasn't he, Daniel?
He was, and that was something the two of them had in common. But it was him not being afraid to just play his game and not be stopped from doing it by the velocity and the ferocity of the shots and the drop shots coming down the other way. He started to read Alcaraz's drop shots. That was the other thing that really came across. But even so, I do think that Alcaraz looks just where he needs to be overall. I wouldn't be concerned for him that he lost a set.
Yeah, I know some people are sort of saying, oh, he's having these lapses in concentration. You just can't afford to do that against the top players. But I might be proven wrong on this. I don't think he would against Djokovic. I mean, that's kind of a marker of the top players, isn't it? That they have these gears. They instinctively know when they can afford to have a bit of a lapse and when they can't. And I think his detectors for that are pretty finely tuned. I'd be surprised if there was any kind of a lapse if the Alcaraz-Djokovic semi-final. Can you imagine if that doesn't happen?
I mean, it's
going to be carnage.
He in particular has some players to get through, doesn't he? Most likely.
Well, he's got Denis Shapovalov next, which I think will be fun in moments. I think it'll have its fun bits.
Shapovalov has nothing to lose there, does he? He can go and have a good time and showboat.
He will have a good time for a bit and lose. Tell me different.
I just think you might see the best of him in that match. And the best of him is bloody good. I mean, I don't think he'll win. I don't think he'll win. But I think he'll push Alcaraz, maybe only within sets, but I think he will, because he's capable of going toe to toe in a way that very few are.
That's what I mean. He'll make it fun. He'll, you know, be like a run chase in cricket. There'll be moments when you think, oh my goodness, wow, he can match him here. This could be a match. And then
that's quite good.
The inevitable will happen, I think.
I agree with you.
But it will be a fun time.
But like, I think, you know, there have been times this last 6 months where Denis Shapovalov has not felt like a serious tennis player. He hasn't felt like somebody who would bring his best and show you what he's got. He's starting to edge towards where he needs to be maybe a bit now.
Yeah, Hannah of running our Twitter during Grand Slams fame gave me an opportunity to quote Logan Roy earlier on today when she was, which, you know, I'm looking for opportunities left, right and centre. Doesn't take much. But she said, how pumped are you for that match? How much are you going to hype it? And I thought, I'm looking forward to it as a spectacle, but I'm not sort of hyped for it like I would have been a few years ago about Shapovalov facing anybody. And I said, Denis, I love you, but you're not a serious player. I've said it twice today now.
It's brutal.
Similar reaction both times. Scathing. Tumbleweed.
But, I mean, it's a great line. And I'm afraid to say, overall, it's accurate.
I'd love it to be different. I'd love that to change.
He can prove that wrong. He has it within him to learn, improve, and prove that wrong, because he's good enough. I don't have faith that he will.
In terms of the rest of Alcaraz's projected draw standing in the way of Alcaraz Djokovic, we've got a potential Musetti Cameron Norrie.
I mean, these are fourth round. On paper, I like these.
I mean, Musetti and Cameron Norrie play next, and then the winner of that would play the winner of Alcaraz. Shapovalov. Norrie absolutely dismissed the ghost of Luca Puy today, didn't he?
Well, and it was on both sides of the net, that, because Puy was so fatigued. He clearly just hasn't been doing this for very much recently. And he hadn't got much energy. But also, Norrie was blooming good. Really good. From ball one, he was on it in a way that he wasn't against Benoit Paire. There was a double bounce in this match. Did you see that by any chance in the third set of that match?
I actually haven't seen it. Matt has, so he's better placed to answer this. But I have heard your interview with Cam Norrie about it, because we were listening to your commentary earlier, David, on BBC Radio, and loving it.
Yeah, it's one of those where I think the answer to that question, do you know whether it's a double bounce, seems to vary. Like, I think some players think, yes, you do know. Sometimes it depends a bit on the situation. This seemed pretty obvious to me. And someone who definitely knew was Luca Pui. He was absolutely adamant, absolutely kind of incensed by it. I was surprised the umpire didn't see it. I guess maybe not as surprised that Cameron Norrie wasn't sure, you know, he was running at full pace, trying to reach it.
And sort of slashing across right. the ball to try and get under it.
Yeah, and he said maybe he felt like he'd got under it and therefore that it spun sort of with backspin. He thought he'd got under it. But as you said to Cameron Norrie, that is just a classic instance where it makes sense to bring in the technology, I think.
I saw in my commentary box that it was definitely a double bounce in slow motion about 20 seconds after it had happened.
And they can't. And we've trialled this.
What's that all about?
This is the thing.
That's what I don't really understand.
It was great. It's not particularly sophisticated technology. It's not complicated technology. It's not anything that would hold up play any
just
more
press,
than...
press, rewind all the, and it, press play, for God's sake, and then everybody sees
it's
it.
It's not like tennis is averse to things that hold up play. I mean, it's faff central out there. Tennis is looking for ways to hold up blooming play.
I'm going to write to the authorities tomorrow and ask why it doesn't happen. All right?
Yeah. Love it. Because we'll co-sign.
It's all well and good talking about why it I want to know why it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely cannot, even for the sake of playing devil's advocate, think of a counterpoint, think of an argument as to defend why it's not happening. Honestly can't. So do it, David. We're all with you.
Okay. I will.
I'm going to confidently speak for the listeners as well there, because I just can't believe there's any sensible person listening that wouldn't agree. And as we know, all tennis podcast listeners are sensible.
Hey.
Before we move on to talk about the women's matches today, I just want to have a word for Stan Wawrinka and Thanasi Kokkinakis. Which was my highlight of the day today. They played for 4 hours and 38 minutes.
I didn't know it was that long.
On Simone Mathieu. And I only watched the fifth set. I mean, I watched a lot of it on the screen that we have at our desks in the media centre. But I got out onto court to watch the fifth set, and it was raucous out there. It was a really, really good time. I got there just as Stan Wawrinka was putting his finger to his head, and I thought, this is going to be good. but Kokkinakis looked like he was a broken man, quite frankly. I am so impressed with the fact that he won that set and that match, because he looked like he was haunted by the ghost of Andy Murray in that fifth set. He looked like he was thinking, this again. This, but without the Aussies in the crowd. How is this happening? And, I mean, he looked pretty physically broken as well. It was an outrageous physical effort from him to drag himself to the finish line in that and withstand the surges of Stan Wawrinka. You know, he was 4-love down, I think, in that deciding set. He retrieved one of the breaks. He had points to get another one of the breaks. Even though on paper it looks, I think it was a 6-3 fifth set, it looks like it wasn't that close. It was right in the balance. And I don't really know who Kokkinakis is as a tennis player. For so long he was defined by being the talented guy that was crushed by injuries.
And actually, he gave a great interview on court that touched on that. The way he just sort of said, you know, I was a really promising lad coming up, and, you know, I haven't done this since all back then. You know, I haven't got this far.
Hasn't won a 5-set match, I don't think, since 2015.
Crikey.
Yeah, he's got into a few fifth sets and not won one. So this, you know, don't think he's going to go on and win the French Open. But
positive signs.
In terms of turning him into something more than the guy who wins Adelaide or reaches the final in Adelaide, you know, whatever it might be, this could be the start of something, because God, his tennis is really good. His forehand is a serious weapon. I think
that's positive science.
Something about the flight of the ball on the forehand is a bit special. And he showed some steel out there today. And there was a really lovely embrace between the two of them after the match. Stan Wawrinka came around the net post to Kokkinakis' side of the net, and they embraced for quite a few seconds, and that kind of told you everything you needed to know about the nature of that match. It was pretty special, and it'll stay with me for a long time. But Kokkinakis through to the third round of the French Open.
Who's he got now? Do we know?
He's got Karen Khachanov.
Oh my word!
I did know that. Well,
that is another agricultural face-off.
That feels like an I don't think he's agricultural.
I mean, he's a pretty boy. He's a pretty farmer.
But the face isn't anything to do with the agriculture.
No, but you know, he likes the whole hair wax and the earring.
I don't think his physique is agricultural.
His game is, though. It's big forehand and belt it.
Yeah, okay.
That feels like a tough draw after going almost 5 hours with Wawrinka.
They're just going to be heaving forehands at each other.
Yeah. I'm backing... No, I'm not. Why am I saying that out loud? Okay, moving on to the women's draw today. Caroline Garcia, the fifth seed. The great French hope is out to Anna Blinkova, who won it on her 9th match point. This was an ordeal watching Anna Blinkova repeatedly trying to get across the line. Served double faults on 2 of the match points. She was broken when trying to serve out the match, and you thought, okay, Garcia's got this now. She's wrestled back control of the match. Garcia got immediately rebroken by Blinkova, who did then eventually serve it out. Biggest win of her career by ranking, but it's not the first time that she's beaten Caroline Garcia, because she did that here at Roland Garros, also in the second round back in 2019. And I have to say, I didn't see that stat, that fact, until after the match today. That had completely escaped my memory. I think because Caroline Garcia was far less talked about in 2019, she was in rather more of a dip of her career, wasn't she? I thought Blinkova was incredible today, barring the...
What did she do well?
Everything, apart from serve for the match.
Throws it out.
She definitely did tighten it. I mean, honestly, I didn't know much about Anna Blinkova, but it was hard to find holes in her game today. And she was helped by Caroline Garcia. But just to stay on Blinkova for one more moment, I was so, in contrast to Kokkinakis, who we were talking about a moment ago, he withstood the atmosphere today, and that was a feat. Blinkova thrived in the atmosphere. She thrived in the hostility of it all, and it was, you know, quite friendly hostility from the French crowd, but it certainly was hostility, and she just, it was fuel to her, wasn't it?
It's quite something to beat Caroline Garcia, the top French player, in a match like that, and then immediately say, I love the public, I love the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was like a troll.
I was like, good for you, Anna.
Yeah, that's how you do it, Coco. she now plays Elina Svitolina, who won today in 3 sets. She had to come back from a set down to beat Storm Hunter, and that will be a replay of the Strasbourg final from Sunday. So that will be 2 matches in a week for those two, which is crazy stuff. On Garcia, she led by a set and a break in this match, and then completely tightened up by her own admission, just out of nowhere, no control over what her body's doing, completely tightened up. In her own words from her press conference, she said, from that point on, I just felt much more tense. After the first set, I was actually very good with my game choices. My ball was going faster. I was hitting it harder. Then I was passive. I let her take the upper hand. I had a wait and see approach. I couldn't read the court anymore. I couldn't walk around the court anymore. And I couldn't get out of the bad momentum. I didn't manage to have the upper hand through and through. I can't explain it right now, just as I couldn't explain it when it was happening on the court. These things have happened before. I know what I have to do on court, but then I get afraid that I won't make it, that I will fail in unrolling my game plan, and I start to make mistakes. Then my balls are too short on my opponent. It's tough to lose after playing like this. And then she was asked about whether it's the Roland Garros effect, the whole French player playing in France. And she said, but it doesn't only happen here. And it was a tremendous self-dissection.
Yeah.
From Caroline Garcia, as people that are constantly trying to understand her as a tennis player, it was, you know, an insight into how she's at a loss to try and understand herself sometimes as
She is one of the great enigmas, isn't she? Mm. Because she's had these spells of total, well, apparently, clarity, and then everything clicking, and then she just goes and wins back-to-back Masters 1000 events like she did in Shanghai and or Beijing and Wuhan, wasn't it, back in 2017, I think. And then she went and won the WTA Finals last year. And you don't really know what it is about those events that has clicked that isn't clicking elsewhere. But, I mean, obviously Grand Slams are the biggest, so maybe that's what it is. We have seen French players struggle here. Amélie Mauresmo being the most obvious one, of course. Sam Stosa in Australia. Although Yannick Noah was pains to tell us a year ago in our Amélie Mauresmo show that it wasn't about nerves with Mauresmo. It was actually that her game wasn't suited to the clay in quite the way maybe we thought it was. Who knows? Maybe he's right. But I don't think Garcia's game is perfect for this surface, but I find it absolutely fascinating hearing her talk like that. And she always makes me feel for her. I wish good things for Caroline Garcia, because she does seem a little tortured.
Yeah, tortured is the perfect word for her. Moving on to Arina Sabalenka, she was a winner today, two straight sets, 7-5, 6-2 over Arina Shymanovic, ranked outside the world's top 200, Shymanovic. So you'd expect Sabalenka to have come through this one. And once again here, the dramatic events for her were in the press conference room. Now I'm going to read you the transcript of the exchange here, but also tell you that I don't think the transcript fully conveys what was going on. I've heard that none of us were in the room. We heard about it immediately afterwards. This was something that sort of sent ructions around the press room, the fact that there'd been this incredibly tense exchange. I heard the audio on your BBC radio coverage, David, and I've spoken to a journalist who was in the room to get their impressions. It was a Ukrainian journalist who has been here covering the whole tournament. It was her who asked this question. She said, I want to ask you two questions, she said. First, it's about Belarus. In 2020, you signed a letter to support Lukashenko, who is the president of Belarus, in times when he was torturing and beating up protesters in the street, and then you eventually showed up celebrating the new year with him. How is it possible that the potential world number one supports a dictator? And at this point, she's interrupted by Arina Sabalenka, who says, I have no comments to you, so thank you for your question. She continues, the second question is, you keep saying that nobody supports war, nobody. But can you speak for yourself and say, I, Arina Sabalenka, flatly condemn the fact that Belarus is attacking Ukraine with missiles and I want it to stop? I've got no comments to you, says Sabalenka. So you basically support everything because you cannot speak up, said the journalist. You're not a small person, Irina. You can. And then at this point, The moderator steps in and says she's made it clear that she's not going to answer, and Sabalenka says yes. And the journalist says, now we know everything, it's all clear. To which Sabalenka says, you've got enough answers from me and I've got no comments to you. An incredibly difficult and tense exchange. I mean, as you can hear, as written down, the fact that these questions are coming from a Ukrainian journalist makes this all the more layered and complicated, I think, because my first reaction when seeing that line of questioning written down is, that's gone a bit far. That's crossed a line there. I think it's a legitimate line of questioning in principle, absolutely. But it's quite clear that Sabalenka has no comment in this situation, and to sort of to keep pushing to get a reaction doesn't quite feel appropriate. And it sounded like it got personal and emotional, which isn't ideal. But it's a Ukrainian journalist, and how can it not be personal and emotional? I'm very glad there's a Ukrainian journalist here covering this tournament and asking the important questions. And of course, it's absolutely understandable that it should get personal and emotional. How can it not? So it's so complicated, I think, isn't it? And I don't know. What was your reaction, David, when you heard the clip?
The same, Catherine. I don't feel qualified to say who's right, who's wrong. I don't think there is a right and wrong, other than I understand why the Ukrainian journalist has done what she's done. And to some degree, I understand what Sabalenka's done. And it's a horrible feeling to hear the conversation, to know what the background is, the backdrop to this, and the reason it's all happening. And yeah, maybe Sabalenka is wrong to have, if she has signed that letter and supported the Belarusian leader as described there. But it's just such a lot for the environment of tennis to handle. And I'm not, and that's not for me to say that it shouldn't be happening. I'm not saying that Ukrainian journalist shouldn't have been able to ask those questions. I think she should, but it's just so difficult for both of them, and I just feel for them, and I don't know what the answers are.
There was an interesting point made by Kim Clijsters alongside you in commentary this evening, which was, I think we all are understanding and sympathetic to the situation of Russian and Belarusian players having family in Russia and Belarus whose safety they would be potentially putting in jeopardy by saying anything overtly anti-war or anti-Putin or anti-Lukashenko. I'm not sure any of us, in all honesty, could say that we would speak up publicly if it meant putting our families in direct danger. But some Ukrainian players have pointed to the fact that they haven't been approached privately by the Russians and Belarusians, and I don't know if that is a universal thing. I don't want to tar everybody with the same brush, and those were quotes from a little while ago. Maybe those approaches have been made, but from the way that somebody like Marta Kostyuk is still talking about the presence of Russians and Belarusians on tour, it doesn't sound like they're all coming up to her and reassuring her that they don't support the war and they're doing everything they can behind the scenes within their power to be anti-war. And it doesn't sound to me like they're all going to Elena Svitolina and saying, we can't make proclamations publicly, but we can donate prize money. We can support Ukrainians financially with our energy. Maybe they are, because the whole point I'm making here is they're not necessarily able to say it publicly. The sense I get is that that isn't happening, though, and that was a very important point I think Clijsters made.
Yeah, I think it was too. And throughout all of this, I suppose I feel most comfortable with what Elena Svetolina said a couple of days ago about let's concentrate at this point on helping Ukrainians. And that feels like the most positive thing that anybody in tennis can really do at the moment. So let's do that.
Moving on to lighter topics, David, Matt, you started your day on Suzanne Longland. That's a bit of a ritual for David at the French Open, watching Markéta Vondrousova against Daria Kazatkina. Let's call it a connoisseur's match. Did it live up to your expectations? They both left the flat this morning just with a spring in their step on the way to Vondrousova Kazatkina.
I had a lovely time. It was just a lovely tennis match. You know, the sport has become so physical and so powerful and so dynamic and athletic, and it's all the better for it, I think, generally. And that's not to say that Kazatkina and Vondrousova aren't great athletes, but that side of their game is not at the forefront of what they do on the court. They're all about the lovely strokes and the angles and it kind of being a craft, I suppose. And to see those sorts of rallies between them was just a pleasure. It was a terrible match to be watching if you happen to pop out for a change, you know, for two games, because, you know, tennis being tennis, you're not allowed back in and you were likely waiting in the gangway for 15 or 20 minutes. These were lengthy games that they were having because, you know, there was quite little to choose between them, really. I mean, Kazatkina ended up winning the match in straight sets, and David can probably comment more on how he feels about Markéta Vondrousova, but from a Kazatkina perspective, I thought she was brilliant today. She was the more proactive of the two. She was the more purposeful. She was trying to finish the rallies, whereas Vondrousova, I'm afraid, she was sort of just moping around the court quite a lot. Her attitude was quite bad. Her shoulders were slumped, and it looked like she was just playing the ball rather than thinking ahead, which I think is when she's at her best. But I greatly enjoyed the rallies and the sort of look of them all and the feel of them. And there was an incredible tweener from Kazatkina, which happened just about 2 minutes after David had had to leave to go to commentary. I was gutted. I felt I needed someone to high five after it. I was just suddenly on my own and leapt up in the press box. It was absolutely incredible. And
is that when you dropped your baguette?
I'd already done that. That was before David arrived.
It spent quite some time on the floor, didn't it?
Well, because the media seats are so good on Court Suzanne Longland, I felt that if I had to go down to reach my baguette, which had fallen a whole row in front of me, I would have been interrupting the players potentially. So it just sort of sat there for about 5 minutes.
What happened after 5 minutes? You then
the game ended,
and then you
sat
the baguette
down. Oh no,
on
I didn't
the floor,
eat it
from the floor. Right?
No, I picked it up and
oh, okay.
Put it in my bag, in its wrapper.
I'd have eaten it,
and then disposed of it later,
and then put it in the bin.
Right. R.I.P. that baguette.
Did I do a weird thing there? Should I behave differently with the baguette?
I was concerned that after those 5 minutes, you then retrieved it and ate the baguette.
No.
Great. David, let down by Markéta Vondrousova. We've all been there.
I'd have eaten it. I said that Vondrousova would reach the final of the French Open, and she's out in the second round.
Well, same, but substitute for Yelena Ostapenko.
Who I initially said I would to reach the final, and then I substituted it with Vondrousova. So that's two I've got that I've put the curse on. I mean, look, yes, there was an element of me having a vested interest in this because it is fun to watch the player you've picked. But I just love watching these two players. And I always go back in my mind to the match I saw them play on the Pietrangeli course at the Rome tournament about 4 years ago. And it was one of my great favourite memories. Just an incredible atmosphere, the angles and the way they play the sport. I mean, Matt's described it to you. Doesn't need me to add much. But I will add that I found watching Vondroušová close up like that is an example of why we come to these tournaments. Why are we on site here? Why are we spending money for this apartment, for the flights, for all the time here that we spend? It's so that you can get close up and see what a player is really like, so that you can get in these press conferences and hear what people are saying and hear and see the facial expressions and all the things that we pick up. In this match, I discovered Markéta Vondroušová has an attitude problem, really, on the court that is, I would say, holding her back. And I think she has tools and talent that should put her in the top 10. And she was, to use Matt's word, moping around and complaining. And it just wasn't the best circumstances for her to get the best out of herself. And she's prodigious talent-wise. And Kasatkina was what she should have been. Kasatkina was the better player, no question. Her confidence was there from ball one. She knew what she wanted to do with the ball, whereas Vondroušová in the wind, you could tell, was thinking, how do I keep the ball in? Okay, I'll just rally. And then, well, you can't do that against somebody playing well. She's good enough to win the match, but her attitude was restrictive.
So, friends of the Tennis Podcast, you've paid for us to come to Paris to discover that Markéta Vondroušová has an attitude problem.
Mopes around.
Unofficial.
Money well spent, I think we can all
that's
agree.
That's my view. Let me down.
Just lastly, Matt, before we talk about tomorrow's order of play, after your trip to Longlen, on the way back, you diverted to Court 13 to watch what you thought might be tennis history.
Mm. That's right, because that's where Nadia Podoroska was playing Karolina Muchova. And if you're wondering what tennis history was at stake in that match, which is probably a fair question, that of course was Reggie's prediction for the day. Reggie, who we love, and had got 17 predictions wrong in a row. Is that right?
In the news,
maybe only 16 at the time.
No, I think 17.
This
17.
Is dating back to, if you're a recent adopter, this is dating back to the Australian Open.
Yeah, that's right. 17 wrong prior to today. He picked Nadia Podoroska to beat Karolina Muchova. Podoroska won the second set 6-love after losing the first set. So suddenly Reggie, bless him, was getting very excited. So I went over to Court 13 and, well, I should have known what was going to happen because Reggie had cursed it. And I did think if Muchova ends up being the player who breaks the Reggie curse, that would be proof once and for all that Muchova herself is cursed. But she didn't break the Reggie curse. Muchova won. Reggie has now got 18 wrong in a row. And yeah, Muchova, I think, is in a very good section of the draw. That would have been, I think that would have been a massive upset if Muchova had lost today. I think she's favoured to go quite far here if she can stay fit.
My predictions need that to happen. They are in ruins.
Yeah.
It's a sorry state of affairs.
Mm. Just while we're on checks, probably the big upset of the day, the big result of the day was Barbora Krejčíková and
have you been talking
Katerina
to your source again?
Siniaková going out. No, I'm afraid I haven't been working the sources today. But I think this one spoke for itself. I mean, they were going for a non-calendar slam, Krejčíková and Siniaková. They'd won the last three slams. Of course, it was the French Open last year that they didn't win because Krejčíková had to pull out because she got COVID. And they lost to Ikeri and Hazumi in three sets. And I didn't see much of this. I caught the closing stages. Siniaková has just come back from a bad wrist injury. And I don't think she'd played since Miami. And it did sound like that was a big factor in their loss. You know, they maybe weren't quite ready to go all the way here. And yeah, so they're out, which is, yeah, just a big upset.
Yeah. Potentially big deal cry. Big deal, comma, cry.
Yeah.
Mm. Although we don't know. Matt has let us down, failed to work the sources. we'll never know if there was cry.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right then, tomorrow's order of play, version 2. We'll come to that in a moment. We start on Philippe Chatrier with Giulio Zeppieri. Can you tell I'm saying that name for the first time?
Nice old name.
He faces fourth seed Casper Ruud in the first match of the day. Then it is Iga Świątek against the American Claire Liu. And finally in the day session, Océan Dodin against Ange Jabeur. I once commentated on a match of Dodin's where she hit about 400 double faults.
She hits a similar number of unforced errors in a lot of them as well. And a lot of winners too.
Yeah. Oh,
does she have a very high ball toss?
Incredibly high ball toss. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, but she can belt the ball. But yeah, I found Jabeur very convincing in the previous round, so we'll see. Now, the night session on Chatrier tomorrow was going to be Holger Rune against Gael Monfils, but unfortunately, very shortly before we started recording this podcast, an impromptu press conference was called by Gael Monfils, and he announced that he would be withdrawing from the tournament ahead of that match, following on from his exploits last night. And we pretty much assumed this would be the news as soon as the press conference was called. We thought he was going to give the reason, well, you know,
you all saw the match,
you saw the state I was in. Obviously I'm not going to be doing any physical activity for the next 2 weeks, but actually he cited a wrist injury that he said he's been carrying for weeks, and that was aggravated last night, and not sort of just generalised full body cramps. So we wish you well, Gael Monfils. He was talking about hoping to come back next year, though. So,
And that, I should just quickly say, topped off a terrible day for the French. Mm. I mean, they lost all six singles matches, Garcia, Humbert, Jean-Jean, Moutet, Puy and Van Ash all lost, and then losing a seventh without even playing. I mean, that's a bad day.
Have they got any left?
They've got Arthur Rinderknecht in the men's.
In the men's. He's the only men's player left standing.
And he hasn't been put on centre.
No.
Well, so who is going to fill the night session match of the day gap left by Gael Monfils and Holger Rune, I hear you ask?
Is it a women's match?
It is not a women's match, David.
No.
It is, in fact, Alexander Zverev against Alexander Molchan.
Oh, great.
Roll up, roll up. On court, Suzanne Longlen. We start with Elena Rybakina against Linda Noskova. She gives the ball a good old belt, does Noskova. First saw her play here last year, actually, against Emma Raducanu. Jannik Sinner against Daniel Altmaier is second up, and then Coco Gauff facing Julia Graber. Last up on Suzanne Longlen tomorrow is Taylor Fritz against last Frenchman standing, Arthur Rinderknecht. Simone Mathieu is Madison Keys first up. Then Diane Parry against Mira Andreeva, which we think could be fun. We think that could be your Vondrousova Kazatkina of tomorrow, the sort of connoisseurs matchup. Then Karatsev against Tiafoe and Sarundolo Hanfman.
Oh, Karatsev Tiafoe.
It is court 14 tomorrow, where you will find Bianca Andreescu against Emma Navarro and Donna Vekic. There we go.
Three.
So that is tomorrow. We wait for a women's match to be scheduled on Philippe Chatrier. I wonder how many men would have to withdraw from the tournament before they put a women's match on there.
Literally all of them.
I mean, we are now at, what is it, 13 men's matches have been scheduled as match of the day in the night session to one women's match.
That I mean, 14 is, if you count Runa Monfils.
Yeah. I mean, that is a disgrace.
Indeed. Right then, happier things. Phoebe, lovely Phoebe, our Roland Garros mascot, our mascot. David has Maisie.
Oh, Maisie.
I've got Xenia, and Matt has Darwin. It was a worrying moment for myself and Xenia today when Taro Daniel started doing things. Today was our ship steadying day.
You nearly didn't get your 10 points.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And Matt, we have shout outs.
We have Bob Hoffman in Puerto Rico.
Right, Bob.
Hello.
Bob says, I listened to the podcast while playing with my dog Mia in the park.
What kind of dog? Is there a photo?
Question for Bob. And a request for Bob.
By the way, our shout out chap from the other day, whose name I can't quite recall, but who played in a symphony orchestra, and we were speculating what instrument he played. Update on that.
Yes, David was one seat out, apparently, because he plays the trombone.
I said tuba.
Mm.
Oh. My goth.
Heck of a guess,
Second shout-out for goth. but can I have a Robert for Bob? Am I allowed to do that?
I mean, I think a Bob would be better, but
Bob
sure.
Bob Bryan?
I mean, he might... Oh, that's a good one. Bob Bryan, you've got me out of jail.
Bob Brett?
Bob Brett, yeah.
Who's your Robert?
It was going to be Robert Seguso, who was a doubles player that I remember from the 80s, and very fondly so, playing against McEnroe and Fleming all those years ago. But Bob Bryan was a good shout, Matt. I wish I'd thought of that.
Don't know what you're going to say when we get an inevitable Robert shout-out tomorrow. Now you've used your big Robert Seguso. Thank you, Bob.
We've also got Jessica Schaefer.
Right, hello, Jessica. Jessica Pegula.
Well done, Catherine.
She won today.
Yeah.
She did, courtesy of a retirement. Georgie retirement. Such but she also won in doubles.
She always wins these rounds.
She's a top three seed in singles, doubles and mixed.
Oh, very good. Who's she playing mixed with?
Austin Krajicek.
Of course.
I knew that.
Of course. Thank you, Jessica.
And finally, we've got Margaret Sutherland, who is in Glasgow.
Hello, Margaret.
Hey.
My mum's middle name is Margaret, and my dad was born in Glasgow, or sort of near Glasgow. Oh.
Did not know that. Can you guess who Margaret's hero is?
No, I can't. Is it somebody current?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to go for...
Don't overthink it, would be what I would say.
Billie Jean King.
No.
I'm going to go for Iga Świątek.
Oh. Andy Murray.
Right, Margaret.
Yes.
Good
they
choice.
They were good clues, Matt.
Good choice of hero.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Margaret, for your support, and Bob, and Jessica, and bonus Garth. It's because of you that we are here at Tennis Podcast Towers in Paris, bringing you daily podcasts from the tennis, from the French Open and the tennis. And we are loving doing it. If you'd like to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, the link to do that is in our show notes. If you'd like to subscribe to the newsletter and find out what Reggie is going for tomorrow, then the link to do that is in our show notes as well. We'll be back tomorrow with another one of these. Thank you as always for listening, and we'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.